Blog Talk Radio.
Paperback Writer.
And welcome to Recipe Records Radio Show. I am your host, Lena Stagg. This is your show for food and music. And I thank you for tuning in today to listen to our honored guest, Aaron Kadovich, who is this tremendous Beatles music scholar. He is going to join us in just a moment. Excuse me. I am very excited about a Beatles festival that is happening this weekend, Memorial Day weekend, in Louisville, Kentucky. It is called Abbey Road on the River, and it is full of Beatle bands, and there's programs. Of course, Aaron Kadovich is going to be there, and plenty of other really spectacular notables will be at the festival this year. I'm really excited that they are also having the Zombies give a performance, as well as the Rascals' Felix Cavalier. I always botch that last name. Maybe Aaron will know how to pronounce it. But I have always been a Rascals fan, a Young Rascals fan. And that is going to be a terrific performance that you don't want to miss if you are planning to go to Louisville this weekend. Make sure that you check out all of the terrific programs and my favorite bands, Britbeat, All You Need Is Love. There are so many great bands that are over there. You can get more information about Abbey Road on the River by going to their website, which is www.arotr.com. Hopefully I said that right. And make your schedule for the weekend. They start on Thursday and they go through Monday. It's a huge event. You can go for one day and it's very reasonably priced and a lot of fun. You will not regret going. I have been for the past 10 years and every year is just full of terrific entertainment and great memories for you and your fans, your friends and your Beatle fans and loved ones. So make sure you check out the fest this weekend. I am very pleased to have part two of my interview with Aaron Kadovich today. He was on an episode of the radio show a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, probably. And it seems like yesterday, but if you want to tune in, if you missed that episode, I encourage you to listen to Aaron's first interview on Recipe Records. And you can find that episode by going to the search box on Blog Talk Radio and search Aaron and you might have to copy and paste his last name, but search his name and Recipe Records and you'll find the episode. He was so great on the show. He is a dynamic young writer and Beatles music scholar. He has spent years studying the technical side of the Beatles music, and it's fascinating. The analysis that he gives for the Beatles songs is really fascinating, and I think you will really enjoy it. Aaron has three programs at Abbey Road on the River this weekend, Do not miss those programs. You are going to love them. And we will, he has a program on Friday, this Friday, May 27th, and one on Saturday and one on Sunday. So we'll give you more information on those after we get connected here. Let me be sure. Hello, Aaron. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, terrific. Thank you so much for squeezing in another interview on the show today. I know you are just crazy driving all over the country giving presentations, and I really, really appreciate you taking the time to squeeze in another interview.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much for hosting.
Where are you calling from today?
I'm in Wisconsin right now.
Okay. All right. So giving more programs up there. And
I just wrapped up my Wisconsin portion. I had a talk in Watertown yesterday and Sun Prairie, which is by Madison, the day before. And then this morning, or this afternoon, rather, I drive home to Carmel, Indiana. And tomorrow, I drive down to Louisville for Abbey Road on the River.
Terrific. Hey, my son-in-law, or my stepson, I can't keep them all straight. My stepson is moving to Carmel, so like in another
there
week. So
wow.
we'll have dinner and talk about the Beatles. So
that sounds wonderful.
I want to make sure that we tell everybody about the three programs that you're giving in Louisville this weekend. They're three very different presentations, all about the Beatles, but they're three very different presentations and highly interesting. I'm going to be sick if I can't get there to see these presentations, because I really, really want to hear the talks. So on Friday, tell us what your program is going to be on Friday.
Certainly. So Friday, May 27th, I'm doing The Influence of American Rock and Roll on the Beatles. And it's looking at recording artists from the 1950s and how that sets up what the Beatles do in the 1960s. So we're looking at guys like Little Richard, Chuck Berry, Elvis Presley, Carl Perkins, Buddy Holly, and all of these, the immediate predecessors for the Beatles. And so that's going to be at 3:30 in the afternoon, 3:30 to 4:45 p.m. at the Muhammad Ali Center at Abbey Road on the River.
And Louisville is on Eastern time, so if you're planning to be over there, make sure that you acknowledge that there is a time difference. But 3:30 to 4:45 in the Muhammad Ali Center on Friday. And the Muhammad Ali Center is a fantastic venue, and I love the theater, I guess, where you will be giving your presentation. It's fantastic. So you're going to really enjoy that. This is one topic that always intrigues me, because I don't think, especially the younger generation, doesn't realize that the British, they don't really realize the British invasion at all anyway, but the British musicians in the 60s were imitating American music and, you know, putting their flavor and spin into the music and just putting it back in our face. So I always find that is a very interesting phenomenon that happened. But the Beatles were highly, I'm not sure that they were influenced by many British artists, were they?
Well, certainly more American artists than British artists. But I do talk about one Lonnie Donegan in this program. He's kind of he's the exception. I call it the influence of American rock and roll, but Donegan is English, not American, and he pioneered the genre skiffle rather than rock
right.
and roll. So he's kind of the odd man out, but he's still a major influence from the prior decade on the Beatles, and that's why I include him, even though he's the odd man out.
Right, right. So, which I know they were influenced by country and western, blues, mm-hmm. Rockabilly. Is there one genre that influenced them more than the others?
Well, I'm not sure there's any one subgenre of rock and roll that's more influential. So rock and roll is kind of a general term. There are a lot of divisions within that. So rockabilly is one. But I'm not sure any one of them is any more influential overall. Now, there are some who are more influential on specific individual Beatles. For example, Carl Perkins is mostly influential on George Harrison. Now, of course, Perkins was influential on all four of them. But if you had to pick one Beatle who was most influenced by Carl Perkins, it would have to be George Harrison. Because Perkins' mm-hmm. strength as a musician was as a rockabilly guitarist. I mean, he pioneered the genre of rockabilly. And George Harrison, being the Beatles' lead guitarist then, makes sense why he would take after Perkins' example. So short answer is no, I don't think you can specify any one particular genre or division of rock and roll as being most influential on the Beatles as a whole. But I do think it's accurate to say that there are that each of the four Beatles have their own have a subgenre of rock and roll that is most influential on them individually.
I see. Okay, so tell the listeners what they're going to hear at your presentation over this topic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the structure of the presentation is that we count down the top nine influences on the band from the prior decade. So we start with the ninth most influential, and then the eighth, seventh, down to number one. And so what I do is set up, I'll play something by a recording artist from the 1950s, and then I'll play something by the Beatles. And the side-by-side comparison illustrates how similar this music really is. And one of the standard questions I get every time I do this program is the notion of plagiarism. And they say, this is so similar. Did the Beatles ever get sued for plagiarism? And the answer is, yeah, they did. John Lennon famously was sued by Chuck Berry's estate for the use of Here Come Old Flat Top, He Come Groovin' Up Slowly. The opening line from Come Together is very nearly word for word from a Chuck Berry song. And I'm blanking on which title. Let me look at my notes. You Can't Catch Me. And You Can't Catch Me, Chuck Berry sings something like, Here Come a Flat Top, He Come Moving Up Slowly. So it's not 100% the same, but it's very, very similar. And Chuck Berry's estate sued John Lennon on grounds of plagiarism, and Lennon was convicted. So there are examples of that. But far more often than not, the Beatles are not sued for their quote-unquote plagiarism. And there's no real definition. There's no clear defining line between what constitutes inspiration versus what constitutes stealing. And I just found a quote the other day from Paul McCartney. He said he in turn was quoting, I think it was Stravinsky, Igor Stravinsky, the orchestral composer, Russian orchestral composer, who said, good artists borrow, great artists steal. And so Paul was referencing that quote, and he said, if that's true, if good artists borrow and great artists steal, then the Beatles have to be the greatest artists of all time because we stole everything. And Paul didn't get that. They didn't steal everything. But his point is taken. I mean, they borrowed very heavily from artists like Carl Perkins and Elvis Presley and Buddy Holly and Chuck Berry. So that's what I do in this program. Is I set up that side-by-side comparison. I say, here is Berry's You Can't Catch Me. Here is the Beatles Come Together. And playing them back-to-back like that makes it very clear that the Beatles were basing their music on these precedents.
Very interesting. Well, isn't there a saying that imitation is the highest form of...
Oh, yes.
complimentary flattery. There we go. So, you know, you do hear the influences in the music, and I like that. I think it's great to hear the influences of other artists. Whenever I listen to some of my daughter's music today, I mean, there are some outright parts of songs that are stolen. And, you know, I'll sit there and say, that's not real. That's a Marvin Gaye song, you know, or whatever. And, you know, of course, she doesn't know anything about Marvin Gaye. But it does allow the listener to kind of reflect upon previous music. But, okay, that sounds fascinating. I want to be there.
it's one of my favorite presentations again.
Love it. On Saturday, May 28th, at 11 o'clock a.m. until 12:15 p.m., you will be in the Muhammad Ali Center again for Carte Blanche, the Beatles White Album presentation. So give us the rundown on this program.
Certainly. Yeah, I was told when I was selecting which programs to book at this weekend's festival, I was told that one of the bands, the cover bands, is performing the White Album in its entirety. And unfortunately, I can't remember the name of the band. I'm sure you can find it on the Abbey Road website. But in any case, so it was suggested that I do a program on the White Album to set up that live performance of the entire album. And it turns out I have a program that I've done many times on the White Album. And in some cases, the structure of my programs for Sgt. Pepper, for example, and A Hard Day's Night go track by track. On Pepper, we go in the order that we hear it on the album. So start with the title track, then go to With a Little Help from My Friend, then Lucy in the Sky, exactly the order that we hear it on the album. With the White Album, however, it is so long and so diverse that a structure like that doesn't really work because, you know, there's 30 tracks and they're all very varied, very different from one another. So what I do instead on this, rather than go track by track that we hear it on the album, is to divide it into the primary author. There's a quote from John Lennon. Rolling Stone magazine once asked him, when did the Beatles actually break up? And John cited the White Album because, in his own words, every track was an individual track. There wasn't any Beatle music on it. It was John and the band, Paul and the band, George and the band. So using that quote as my starting point, I divide up the 30 tracks of the White Album into the primary author of them. So we look at Paul's songs, we look at George's songs, we look at John's songs, and we look at Ringo. And that helps wrap your head around how diverse this music is. I mean, if we look at the author rather than that track-by-track structure, if we structure it by author, that helps comprehend the music. So then within that structure, within that primary author structure, then we can break it down into songs. For example, one of the subcategories is songs about India. One of John's subcategories are found lyrics. Another one are songs about Yoko. So you divide them up into the primary author and then further divide them up into categories. And that way you can make sense of this very large and very diverse body of work.
Very, very interesting. I know I had done some reading recently about how most of that album was written when they were in India studying meditation and such with the Maharishi. And I know that had a lot of influence over what they produced.
Very much so.
I always felt like a lot of the songs were kind of disjointed, like you say. They just sort of all got put on there. But at the same time, you did hear a lot of the early influence on several of their songs, you know, more simplistic songs. You know, there's several of them are kind of simple and short.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're kind of fragmentary, which is no doubt deliberate, because they had just the year prior done Sgt. Pepper, which is you know, as a concept album, it's one idea that unifies the entire album. All the tracks fall under that umbrella structure. And with the White Album, they want to do the complete opposite. And so they put out this extremely diverse, often very simple, and fragmentary album. And it would be very difficult to try and cram all of these different songs under one idea, one notion, one concept, the way they did with Sgt. Pepper. So they're deliberately creating an album that is the antithesis in many ways of Pepper.
Very cool. I did look up on the Abbey Road on the River website, and mm-hmm. I think I found the band. The band's name is 64. Does that sound familiar? Does that sound like the right one?
Probably, yeah. I just don't remember.
64, they are playing Friday evening at 10 p.m. to 11:30 p.m., and they are going to give the White Album concert in the main plaza of the Ollie Center. So that'll be really great. I don't know that I've heard that band. You know, they have like 100 bands. But another side celebrity that is going to be at Abbey Road this weekend that kind of ties in with the White Album is Prudence Farrow. And she is Mia Farrow's sister, who was doing meditation with the Maharishi and Rishikesh at the same time. So she is going to be at the festival as well this weekend, and I'm pretty sure on Sunday morning she is going to be, you can meet her, and there's supposed to be some yoga and meditation given by her, but I don't see that right now. But very, very interesting and very cool. And I people that are going to be at this festival are going to really, really enjoy your presentation. So encourage everybody to get it on your calendar to attend this weekend. So, okay, that is on Saturday, 11 a.m. Mm-hmm. to 12:15, the White Album. Then on Sunday, 12:30 to 1:30, same place, is the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, the rock and roll fans' constant argument, which was better, the Beatles or the Stones. I mean, I've heard that since I was a little girl. And so tell us what your presentation will entail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so in this case, the two bands, the Beatles and the Rolling Stones, shared a lot of similarities in terms of the overall scope and progression of their careers. For example, both bands start out in similar ways. They're both inspired by American popular music, blues and R&B and rock and roll, and then they enter a juvenilia period, this period where they achieve superstardom in both sides of the Atlantic, both the U.S. and the U.K. Then they enter an adolescent period of sorts where they grow up a little bit. They mature from that teeny bopper superstar status and grow into the foremost artists of their time. Both bands then enter a psychedelic period and end their careers in the 1960s, at least. The Stones, of course, continued, the Beatles didn't. But they end that decade by in a retrospective style. They return to roots. They go back to basics as a way of moving forward. So both bands have very similar large-scale scopes and progressions throughout that decade, throughout the 1960s. That being said, for all those large-scale similarities, there are a great many small-scale differences. So looking within that large framework, the Stones and the Beatles are often opposite of one another. The Stones are fashioned as this kind of anti-Beatles. The Beatles have a certain degree of polish, where the Stones are much more raw and gritty, in a kind of proto-grunge type of way. So this entire program, The Beatles and the Rolling Stones, is looking at that relationship, these large-scale similarities, while simultaneously observing these small-scale differences.
Very, very interesting. You know, whenever I listen to their, you know, the Stones music, you know, I'm knowing they're born of the same substance as the Beatles, but there is something, you know, like you say, raw, gritty, dirty, that seems to be around, you know, part of their music, their sound.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is very, very interesting to hear you break it all down and describe it accurately, because I don't always describe things properly. So it will be completely entertaining to hear your analysis of these two bands, and I can't think of a better place for you to be giving your presentations than Abbey Road on the River. I truly can't, and I am not a paid endorser by any means. I've just been going to this festival for years and enjoying the many presentations, authors that are there, and you know, last year Anthony Robustelli was there, and he has a book out about I think he breaks down the first Beatles album, but I know that you have several books as well, and your books will be available at your programs, and you will also have a table within the Ollie Center, I think.
Yes,
and
it'll be somewhere in the Ollie Center. I think she said the lobby, but I'll find out when I get there.
I think that's where they were last year, and it's a really good high-traffic area. And
sure.
So if you are there, I encourage you to stop by and say hi to Aaron. Let him know you heard him on Recipe Records Radio Show. take in his books. His books are fascinating. I do have one of your books, and I am very famous for starting books, but not finishing books. And the book I was working on of yours was, I think it's called The Beatles and the Avant-Garde.
Yep, that was my first one.
Okay, and just as a quick browse through, the one question that, and I didn't read the book all the way through. I apologize for that up front. But, you know, I saw there were chapters where you discuss John, Paul, and George in the avant-garde, but I did not see a chapter on Ringo.
Mm-hmm. I had thought about adding one. In one of Mark Lewisohn's books, I think it's the Recording Session book, he talks about Ringo recording in 1967 an experimental drum track. And so that intrigued me. I mean, that was the first, I had never heard of that outside of Lewisohn's book. So I actually emailed Mark Lewisohn to see if he had any more information or if I could somehow listen to that and see, you know, what exactly is he doing? What does experimental mean? I mean, that can mean just about anything. Anyway, so Lewisohn wrote back and said, you have to understand this was 20 years ago that I did this research and I don't remember, you know, what it was or anything. And he said, I wouldn't, however, give it much, too very much thought or space in the book because, he was implying that it wasn't a very substantial thing. I mean, maybe it was a failed experiment. That always happens when you don't know what's going to happen. You run the risk of the experiment not turning out the way you had hoped. So to this day, I have no idea what that experimental drum track was, what it sounded like. I have no idea. I've never heard it or anything like that. So anyway, I considered trying to add something for Ringo, but I just didn't have enough material to justify creating another chapter for him. Now, that being said, I do have an interlude about George Harrison that is quite short. George made an experimental album called Electronic Sound in, 68, 69, I forget the year. It's in the book. But so he actually followed through with that idea in a way that Ringo didn't with his idea. And so that's why I include something with George, even though it's very brief. I think the George section is only 3 pages long, which is why I call it an interlude rather than a full chapter. The Lennon chapter is like 50 pages long or something like that. So
right.
Anyway, that's the short answer. It's just there wasn't a whole lot of material to talk about with Ringo in this context. Now, it just so happens that one of my programs is looking at Ringo and celebrating his contributions to the Beatles, which are substantial, contrary to what many Beatles fans think.
Right.
And I do hope to eventually turn that into a book, an entire book analyzing his drumming and celebrating his substantial contributions to the Beatles. That being said, for that book, The Beatles and the Avant-Garde in particular, specifically, there just isn't a whole lot to talk about with Ringo, and that's why he's virtually absent from the whole thing.
I see. Well,
so it's
our,
not just
our...
Ringo. I love Ringo, and I'm working on
I know.
Stuff with him, but for that book, there wasn't much to talk about.
Right. Well, our we share the same publicist, and Nicole will be very happy to hear that you are planning to perhaps publish a book on Ringo.
Yes, indeed. In fact, I'm doing that program in Kendallville, Indiana, which is north of Fort Wayne, rather close to Michigan, where Nicole lives. So she said at one point that she wanted to come down so she could hear my Ringo program.
Awesome. Okay, well, we're running out of time, but I want to make sure that the listeners know they can find you at your website, and it's aaronkadovich.com.
That's aaronkadovich.com. But it's probably faster, and I think I mentioned this the last time I was on your show, it's probably faster just to Google Aaron, A-A-R-O-N, Beatles Scholar, and that'll be much easier than trying to spell my Wookiee last name.
Excellent. On your website, you can sign up to receive your newsletter, which is fascinating.
Yeah.
I love to receive your newsletter. And it also has your schedule, which is all over the country. And you can, I encourage the listeners to find out if Aaron is going to be near you or if you have a venue near you that would be a perfect fit for Aaron to give a program. You can get in touch with Aaron as well and invite him. So I encourage you to do that as well. You can also find Aaron's books, and he has many, and they are all fantastic, fascinating books. They are also on Amazon, I believe. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. And another little side project that you do on your website is called the Beatles Minute, and I freaking love the Beatles Minute. I become a Beatles expert after 1 minute of watching or listening to your Beatles Minute. So I encourage everybody to check out Aaron's Beatles Minute. Very good work, very, very good work, and looking forward to seeing your presentations this weekend, Aaron. And also, I encourage you to check out our previous interview on Recipe Records, the radio show. He was on our show about 5 or 6 weeks ago. And is there anything I am forgetting? You have a blog that you also... update on your website?
The day before every program I give, I post a blog advertising that program, and I usually supplement it with whatever it is I happen to be working on at the time. So right now I'm working on a book analyzing structure in Beatles music. So a lot of my current blogs are looking at, you know, how do the Beatles use structure? How do they use verses and choruses or solos, that kind of thing? But the subjects vary greatly from one post to the next.
Okay. Very interesting. I started reading a book recently, another book, and your mind would be boggled if you could see all the books that I've started reading. It is by Jeff Emmerich. I can't remember the title of it, but
Everywhere.
Is that it? You are so right. It is magical. I'm only about 60 or 70 pages into it, but it's very interesting, and you feel like you're right there experiencing the whole process that the Beatles went through when they were in the recording studio, and that is just a really interesting thing to me. Even though I'm very unmusical, I appreciate the work and appreciate what we're hearing. So I really thank you very much for being on the show today, Aaron. And looking forward to seeing you this weekend, somehow, some way, and probably meet you in Carmel.
Very good.
Okay. Well, have safe travels, and my best to your wife as well and your dog.
Thank you very much.
All right. Take care, Aaron. That will do it for today. Recipe Records is food for thought, food for the soul, food for the love of rock and roll.